It's Ian Pickus back in the congressional corner today with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, a Democrat in office since 2013 and a longtime guest on our show from when he was in the House. So I was reading your op-ed about the housing crunch the other day, which is particularly acute in Connecticut. What's the fix?
Well, I think this is the biggest crisis facing Connecticut right now, the cost of housing and our inability thus far to be able to make policy changes that allow us to start building more housing. There are a lot of creative solutions to the high cost of housing and the high cost of rent and the low vacancy rate in Connecticut. That's one of our biggest problems, is that we just don't have a lot of vacant apartments, and that means prices go up, but it also increases the risk of homelessness. But the quickest solution is to just build more housing. We have a supply problem. And like, you don't have to get more than 2 weeks into economics 101 your freshman year in college to know that if you have low supply and high demand, you're going to have high prices. That's what's happening in Connecticut. We are not building enough housing. So I really believe it's got to be a solution that comes from both the federal government and the state government. The federal government can deliver more resources. We can increase the amount of money that goes into affordable housing. That happens largely through tax credits that we give developers to build affordable housing. But it also can be direct grants to municipalities to build, for instance, new senior housing. But the state's got to get serious, too. I mean, the state has some of the most restrictive zoning laws in the nation. It is so hard to build on your own property, to add on to your own house. It is unconscionable how hard we make it in Connecticut to build new housing. So the state and local municipalities have got to, you know, think about how we make it easier for a developer to, you know, come in and build multi-unit housing, how we make it easier for an individual to just build onto his own house, to perhaps, you know, allow his in-laws to or her in-laws to live in a multifamily environment. So, you know, it's got to be a conversation that happens between the federal government and the state government. But it's an imperative. Connecticut is not going to survive as an economy if we can't figure out a way to build more housing, because people want to live here. That's the good news. Businesses want to come to Connecticut. People want to live in Connecticut. And the primary barrier for young people staying in Connecticut and people moving to Connecticut is the high cost of housing.
Now, I remember listening to Governor Lamont's last State of the State address. And, you know, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I remember the message was very similar to what you were saying, but also that growth had to be managed very carefully. So do you think, you know, Governor Lamont is a partner in your vision here?
Governor Lamont cares deeply about the issue of housing. I think this conversation around local zoning laws is a really hard one. You know, a lot of towns have gotten used to being really restrictive in stopping lower income housing or affordable housing from coming into their town. And some of that is for very reasonable and thoughtful reasons. You do want to have managed development, but sometimes it's because, you know, people have a misimpression about who lives in low-income housing. There's no safety threat to communities because of low-income housing. Your school quality doesn't go down because your schools are, you know, educating a diverse set of kids. I just think that, you know, we've got to challenge towns to really, you know, think about what's in their long-term best interests. If every town decides not to build new starter housing, then this economy is not going to grow, and everybody's going to be hurt by that. So I know it's a hard conversation for towns to have, but it's a really necessary one. And, you know, there may be some things the state needs to do to make it harder on towns to deny, to veto additional housing units. That is not in the long-term interest of the state, for towns to be able to, you know, have the ability to just say no over and over and over again to any housing that people can afford.
You know, another societal problem you've been focused on solving is the loneliness epidemic. We talked about that the last time. Any progress?
Yeah, we're really trying to build a bipartisan coalition to talk about this issue of social connection. You know, this is a fairly new issue for people in politics. I'm helping to lead the conversation. The Surgeon General has been a big player in this. But all this has happened very quickly. I mean, in a short amount of time, our kids have become addicted to these smartphones. In a very short amount of time, Americans are spending far less time with friends and family. You know, 30 years ago, only about 25% of Americans reported having three or fewer friends. Today, the number is 50%. That's a stunning increase in the withdrawal from society and friendship and communion for Americans. And so no wonder that, you know, we're seeing a rise in self-harm and violence and addiction and political instability. So we've got to really think about social connection policy. How do we make it easier for people to be back in touch with friends and family? And that's not easy. That doesn't happen overnight. Right now, I'm just trying to find Republican partners that I can work with to think about the path forward. I've started a new effort with the Republican governor of Utah called Finding Common Ground. Part of our effort is to try to find ways to help people get out of this pattern of isolation they're in. I've been talking to a small group of Senate Republicans about legislation we might introduce next year to breed more social connectedness. Policy is comprehensive. You've got to regulate these smartphones. You got to make it less likely that people are going to be addicted to that technology. You have to increase wages so that, you know, you don't have to work 70, 80 hours a week, that you actually have free time because you get off work at 5 o'clock. You got to rebuild the health of our institutions. Less people belong to churches and unions and social clubs, and that's where people used to find a lot of connection, a lot of companionship. You got to help those institutions get healthy again. So there's no easy fix here, but people are lonely, more lonely today than ever before. And, you know, we have to admit that that's part of what is destabilizing our nation.
Okay, so we just have a couple of minutes left, but speaking of bipartisan efforts, way back when you were the lead negotiator on the immigration compromise deal, and that deal was torpedoed by opposition from former President Trump. He told the Republicans not to give Biden a win, basically, and make it a campaign issue instead. So now that an election is almost here, if things go the way you would like in November, is it possible to just kind of put that deal back on the table, or will you have to start over?
Well, Vice President Harris has made it pretty clear that if she wins, she is going to ask Congress to revisit the bipartisan border bill. Yes, of course, maybe there's the opportunity to go back and, you know, look at renegotiating parts of it. But we worked really, really hard. Myself, Senator Lankford, very conservative Republican from Oklahoma, Senator Sinema, border state, independent senator from Arizona. We worked very hard to put together that bipartisan compromise. So I don't think that we need to go back and rework it or redo it. I think we might be able to amend it, make it a little bit stronger. But I'd like to see it come back to the floor. It's failed twice because almost every Republican has voted against it. But they voted against it because Donald Trump told them to vote against it, as you said. If Donald Trump loses this election and he's no longer the effective leader of the Republican Party, maybe some of those Republicans that, you know, absent his directive would have supported it, will support it. So depending on the results of this election, maybe we have a chance to actually make some progress on border security. I'm really proud to have been the author of that bill, and I'm hopeful that it'll have another shot to pass.
To be continued. We've been speaking with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, a Democrat in office since 2013. We're very grateful for all of this time. We know how valuable it is. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thanks, Ian.